is Ilona Lithwaite, and I'm an actress and a feminist, and have been a feminist ever since I was a small girl, before I knew the word.
Have you? Was that something that your mother spoke to you about, or is that something? No.
No, but when I grew up, which was in the 50s, fathers had a very different kind of place in the family. I mean, they were dominant, but they weren't present.
Okay.
And I grew up thinking that the whole marriage thing was ridiculous. Really? And I never liked boys as an adolescent.
Yeah.
I occasionally fell for them against my better judgment, but I didn't like them. Yeah. I thought they were, you know, not the best part of the species. and I formed some very earlier opinions about people's behaviour. And it's interesting that here I am, I'm married and have been for a long time, and I have a son and granddaughters. But as an adolescent, I didn't think that was going to happen to me. I thought, no, I'm going to live my life totally solo and do what I want when I want. Actually, I have done that. I've lived how I wanted, really. So that's okay. Mm. But it was a very strong urge in me. And also, I had very strong feelings about class and the unfairness of the world and the injustice. And because my dad was in the Air Force, how the English behaved abroad, which I saw, first of all, as an eight-year-old, and even then I was clocking that I didn't like how white people were talking to what they termed the natives.
Right.
I found it ugly. So, and that was in Malaya.
I was going to ask where that was. Okay. So my history isn't the best, but yeah.
Malaysia, as it's now called.
Malaysia. Okay, yes. Okay. So that was, did you travel with your father then when he went? Okay.
Yes, this was in the 50s, which is when Malaya got their independence.
Okay.
But I found a lot of the behaviour there really, really strange, and I started to judge and think about things,
It's just interesting to the reason I was like, was it maybe your mother who kind of instilled that in you? I think that's for me, you know, my history of learning about feminism, my mum kind of taught me things when I was very small. So I just think it's really interesting that you as a kind of individual were seeing things and noticing things that perhaps even grown-ups weren't.
Yes, I think a lot came from my mother subliminally, actually. Mm. She wasn't a complaining woman, so she never complained about her lot.
Yeah.
But I knew that she was highly intelligent. She went to university when it wasn't normal.
Okay.
And she came from a very upper middle class family, and my father came from a very working class family, and they met in the Second World War, which is how unlikely people teamed up together.
Yeah.
And I saw that she had done some fascinating work before she was married. She worked on cancer research and so on. And then she became a Wren during the war. Oh. And that's where she met my dad, of course. But she, after that, became a mother and a wife. And I suspect that was very frustrating.
Mm.
And I suspect she wanted to be a working... And she did. She taught later on, but very much when my brother and I were sort of off her hands and we were at school and she had time to work, you know?
Yeah. It's just interesting to kind of get a foundation, I suppose, and then kind of look at your time at Greenham and kind of what brought you to a place like that that is also rejecting that kind of way of traditional, I suppose, way of living and a hierarchical, patriarchal way of living, you know. You've got this amazing photo album here that you've opened up. Sorry, I'm just now just being distracted.
Well, this is the day of... this is on the Greenham Commons, Sunday, the 11th of December, 83. And I'm just going to enlarge this because this poster says, "Bring mirrors to turn the base inside out. Trees to plant, candles for silent vigil, and instruments for songs." Well, I didn't bring an instrument because it would have to be a piano, and that wasn't practical. But seeds and everything else. Wow. I'm going to come round here. Okay. Is this okay?
Yeah, of course.
Just so that you can see. So this is us kind of, this is really through the day. So this is us arriving. Yeah.
So this is...
And the whole fence was surrounded. Yeah. It wasn't the Embrace the Base day, because that was earlier.
So this is, I think, Reflect the Base.
Reflect the Base, right? Exactly, okay. That.
I'm just seeing a whole line of women just around the base. It's so cool.
And I'm terribly ashamed that I look sort of smarter.
Is that you?
That's me, oh, yes. Wow. In my black coat. I only look smart because it's a black coat. But I had pink wellies on.
Oh, yeah. They almost look like your legs. They were so, yes, kind of skin coloured.
And it was, this particular day was extraordinary.
Mm.
Because if, you know, you could go back on other days, which I did, and there were less, you know, there weren't so many people around, but the camps were always in place. And I really admired those women.
Were there loads of women when you first got there, when you first arrived?
Yeah.
And was that the first time you saw Greenham?
Yes, was the first day ever. And so, I mean, Amazing. Look, as the day, more and more people arrived.
Wow. Yeah.
And that gives an idea, because of the way, lie of the land, just how many.
It looks like a kind of mass migration.
And this was the beginning of the, when the fence was being cut.
Right. Did you partake in the fence cutting?
I didn't have bolt cutters. Okay. Did you see the picture of the bolt cutters?
Yeah, I have.
But I helped, once there was a hole, I helped.
Brilliant. Just kind of getting in there.
And then this was just that shows you a little bit that all the trees were decorated with stuff.
What kind of things would be put in the trees?
Well, kids' clothes, a lot of a very sort of kids' clothes, bits of knitting, also woven into the fence.
Yeah.
In fact, I think there's a picture over here with the...
this is a great scrapbook, by the way.
There. Oh, these are the little kids' clothes. In fact, I sent this picture to Rebecca because she said her mother had taken her there when she was about 6 or 7. Yeah. I sent this to her and said, could this be you?
That could be you, this tiny little girl. And so are they lighting candles?
Yes, this was the vigil.
Right, okay, and this happened at night.
And look, it just went right the way round.
Yeah, I can see loads of candles just being lit up.
Don't have any particular action shots, which is a pity. It was extraordinary.
Yeah.
It was a completely wonderful day.
What was the feeling?
Kind of pride.
Yeah.
And I often get it when I go on a march, you know, because just that feeling of the power that people have.
Yeah.
But I hadn't been on a completely female occasion before, and and that was very, very exciting.
Yeah. Was it?
I loved it. Got some pictures actually of the CND march. Earlier.
Nice. Well, I was going to ask this. So this absolutely wasn't your first experience with the CND.
Oh no!
No.
Ooh, no! No! No!
No!
So. There's,
when did you become a part of the peace movement, I suppose is my question. When you were born.
I can't remember exactly. I can't remember. Very young. But this was also in 83. I think this was October 83.
So this is a CND rally in October 83.
These were all people I knew. My son. He came on all the marches. Poor Blighter. All the marches, all the theatres, he was there.
How old is he there, do you think?
There, I would say about 7.
Oh.
This is my family. And a wonderful day for it as well, as you can see. And this was in Hyde Park, where it sort of got, because, you know, everyone sort of dissipated and there were picnics and songs and speeches and so on. But, so that's that, really. I don't think there's any more to see.
They're nice.
To do with... I've got loads on my phone. Of I go on all the equity marches.
Oh, good.
Yes, because I'm with my South East London equity branch.
Yeah. So, what I love about just looking through a scrapbook like that is it could just be anyone's like family photos, but they're also so political, I guess, obviously, because of the context and what you're doing. But I don't know, I just love that kind of meshing of things. But when you were so when you were at Greenham, you already had children.
Yes, I had a son.
Cool.
Yeah.
And were you... you said before that you were kind of back and forth at Greenham's from the Reflect the Base time. You kind
that,
of went.
That was the first time.
Yeah.
I don't know why I wasn't there in 82. Maybe I was. Oh, I think I was in Liverpool at Liverpool Playhouse for a long time just before that.
Yeah.
I think I was away quite a lot.
Yeah.
But that was when I was very much back in London.
Yeah.
And could get involved.
Yeah.
All over again.
Yeah. So when you first went, were you there for just like that one big day?
That one big day, right into the night. It didn't stay the whole night.
Okay.
And I'm not sure we didn't come back the next day, because in fact I think it was a whole weekend.
Mm.
And my sister-in-law, who I went with, that she lived quite near there.
Mm. Oh, okay.
So she was a... But she's been hopeless, I would say, because she can't remember a thing. Actually, no, that's not true. That's not fair. But I've been asking her some questions about that day. She said, I don't remember.
But she was there?
Yeah, she was there, very much so. Yes.
Yeah.
And various friends.
I was going to ask, did you come with friends then?
We went, with some of the people in those pictures.
Some faces in those pictures, yeah.
Yeah.
And had they been before, or is it all new?
I think one of them had been. I think one of them was quite a regular visitor, and then another person who I emailed recently, who is being interviewed by your other team.
Oh, nice!
She's been very much there,
yeah.
And she's somebody I usually meet at WOMAD.
Oh, okay.
But she was there, and she would go and stay there.
Yeah.
For odd weekends.
Yeah.
And. Move in. And she got imprisoned, so she very interested. I'm afraid I didn't get imprisoned, Alice. Sorry.
Don't be sorry. Do you feel like, though, that you should have been?
I sort of do. I sort of feel a bit guilty. And also they got it, by the time I was there, they had it really sewn up, because she was one of the, I think there was, what do they call it, the no-name day, or something to do with not stating your name.
Oh, yes.
So if you were arrested, they wouldn't find out who you were.
Yeah.
And so you didn't have a criminal record.
Yeah.
Which was pretty canny.
Yeah.
Because you don't want to pick up one of those.
Were you ever on any actions where you were very close to people being arrested? Then you said your friend was. Were you there, or were you aware of that?
I saw people that when that got nasty later on in that day,
right.
And I saw people being unless it was the next day. I can't divide the days up until I find this bloody diary. but it got quite aggressive.
Yeah.
Later on, and verbally quite unpleasant. Yeah. And I don't think all the police were like that. Obviously, they weren't. But when it got difficult, and when there were so many women there and so difficult to control, and they deal with one bunch, and then there was a whole lot more arrived, you know?
Yeah, yeah. But did you see any tactics being employed by the women to either make that more difficult for them, or... evade them, or
I know there were tactics going on. Yes, I mean, they were hopeless. They'd tie themselves up and chain themselves to the fence, and there were all kinds of, and they got into the base.
Oh, yeah,
you know, over the top, and then they got underneath. I didn't see this
underneath,
I think they dug down underneath. I think so.
Whoa.
because they thought if we can get over the top, then we can go on. I think there was an, but I maybe I need to do my homework on that one because I'm not sure.
I love the idea of that. I think I love when I've seen like footage or pictures or things that, you know, diaries even. There always seems to be some kind of sense of humour about the situation, even if people are being arrested or. And I know it's obviously an incredibly serious thing, but there is that kind of.
I think a lot of people had a great deal of fun.
Mm.
And you know, human beings are such survivors, aren't we? So they got up, they got used to being cold and wet and covered in mud. but it was, I think the spirit of the thing was so strong.
Yeah.
Really, really strong.
Yeah.
And it was my first experience of so many women all together, and I loved it. I thought it was really.
What did you love about that?
Well, it felt very special. I liked that feeling of sisterhood and being connected to all these other women, and it felt very powerful. And growing up when I did, this was something quite new.
Mm.
And the feeling that actually women can change things.
Yeah.
And I've always believed in protest. I think it's, you know, people sometimes say, well, what's the point? You can't change anything. I think you can. I really believe you can. And it was very theatrical. That's the other thing.
So without a
doubt, yes. Yeah. And I love that. There was a sort of heightened sense of drama and something happening and doing something.
Mm.
And doing something against a very powerful enterprise.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah, when you say theatrical, because I agree with you, I feel like that too, and I think it attracted a lot of people as well who were involved in the arts and creativity. Mm. What for you about it, about Greenham in particular, was so theatrical?
Well, being part of a group, so the theatre process, and I think why a lot of people are attracted to the theatre is because you form a group of people, and it's almost like it's a blitz situation because you're together with those people for a short time to produce a result.
Mm-hmm.
And here we were together for whatever length of time to hopefully produce some kind of result.
Mm.
And I think it did, although I am appalled. I think I said this to you on the phone. I'm appalled that I've asked a couple of people, young women, probably your age, what they have heard about Greenham, and they haven't known about it.
Mm.
Which really shocked me. Liam, who this very brilliant IT guy who was here today, he wanted to know what all this was about, and I said, did you know about Greenham? He said, well, I wasn't born, which he wasn't. No. Of course. Yeah. And you weren't, but
why do you think, though, that is? Why is, for instance, you know, this year there's been a lot of, last year there's been a lot of suffragette talk, and the talks about, you know, Emmeline Pankhurst is a name that everyone kind of knows and remembers and celebrates. Why do you think this kind of peace movement at Greenham is not as well known?
Well, I think it lacks certain names that were the nucleus. I mean, there was a nucleus of women. You know, you come across, I think Gillian Booth was one of them.
Mm-hmm.
You come across their names again and again. But it, like you're saying, you know, suffragettes, you immediately have a slew of names that one identifies with and have gone down in history. And when you hear about the Greenham woman, but you don't pick out specific names. And I think possibly that. Also, when the base did finally close, they never, ever, ever said, yes, it's because of what the women did.
Yeah.
It was the men making a decision that it was now the time to close it.
Yeah.
You know, so I don't think it's been given credibility for the enormous amount that it's done for women, actually. And it's interesting that women are, I mean, not enough, but women are increasingly present in our, well, we've got a female prime minister, for God's sake, and we had one then. Neither of whom I like, but that says something. Women are much more present on television. There are women presenters, and I mean, that's all good. I'm not saying it's because of Greenham Common, but that was the beginning, I think, of women realising their power and the impact they could have.
Mm.
I mean, it wasn't popular with a lot of people. A lot of people really hated it and hated them being there.
Who hated it the most?
Well, I don't know. I think the local people got very bored. I think, to begin with, I think they were enthusiastic. But I think after a while, they began to find it a bit kind of tedious.
Did you ever have any run-ins with local residents or...?
Well, I didn't, because I didn't stay there. Mm. I think the people who stayed there possibly did.
Because, I've heard of some, calling themselves vigilantes. I wouldn't really even describe them as that, but, you know, hounding the women at night and things like that.
Yes, I think all of that happened.
Yeah.
And I think there were, you know, and I think that was both sexes. I think it was men and, sadly, women who did that. So it, you know, took something to stay there. And right at the beginning, when because it was a march from Cardiff, wasn't it, that began the whole thing.
Yeah.
And I believe when they had no idea what was going to happen. When they got there, they didn't know how they'd be received. And I think after a while they thought, oh, well, we'll pack up and go home. Because, and then all these letters began arriving from people all over the country and all over the globe, saying, what you're doing is amazing. And so they had to sort of rethink. I'm just going to read you a poem.
Oh, I'd love that.
By this lady, Wendy Poussart. Now, this is a book I edited of poetry.
Oh, cool.
Back in the 80s. And it sort of grew out of a theatre experience. Mm. And this is an Australian lady. And she wrote two poems, actually, which are both... this is the Greenham. It's called Greenham Women. Rugged up for winter snow, you have put your bodies where your hearts are, against the gates and under the wheels of war. Today the missiles came to Greenham Common. We saw it in the papers and wept for you. You are our elder sisters, making the time kindly to send us greeting as you beat against the storm. Like you, we sit on the doorstep of the world's end, and will not look away. The people long to know something is indestructible. It may only be you. And she wrote that. She was an activist in her own right.
Mm.
And then this is a poem which is about them fighting the same kind of situation there, a place surrounded by fences with machines and missiles inside. Mm. So it's more of the same. And in here also, I have poems by Pat Arrowsmith.
Mm.
And she was at every Peace March there was, and every CND March. Yeah. And I don't know if she was at Greenham. I mean, she was quite a bit older then, I suppose. I first came across her. Well, actually, no, only 10 years before. So I expect she was there.
Mm. Just as you're talking about that woman, I had a flashback to an earlier question about, you know, why the suffragettes are remembered and them having more names and things. And then I thought, well, there are names at the CND, there are. But is it the almost the very kind of ethos to not be a name and not be a figurehead, and actually it's about the collective? Is that...
I think it was at Greenham Common.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
If you think, I mean, when I was in the 70s, the Workers' Revolutionary Party was very dominant in England.
Mm.
And I was with a boyfriend who joined, and it was very, very full on. And there are a lot of middle class people like myself who joined this party and espoused the working person's cause. And I couldn't quite accept it. I really liked what they stood for. And people in that were very dominant, and one of them was Vanessa Redgrave.
Oh, yeah.
And she would hound people in Equity and say, are you coming along, and we want to see you, and you've got to belong to the WRP. And so there were names attached to that, and it certainly wasn't just women, it was men and women.
Yeah.
And I went to a lot of their meetings, which I found difficult, because they were some lovely people, but at a certain point the slogans would start and that kind of dialogue would take off. Mm. And I found that a bit tricky, because you stop talking to people about ideas and things, and it ceased to be a two-way thing, and I don't like being lectured.
Yeah. Well, comparing that to Greenham, what was communication like there?
Well, it was very different, really. I never felt that sense of oneness or belonging that I felt at Greenham Common. I mean, it was political in a very different way. It wasn't espousing the women's place in society particularly. It was very much the Workers' Revolutionary Party, you know.
Yeah.
So it had a different kind of feel to it.
Yeah.
But it was, my then boyfriend was very ardent and you know, and wanted me to join. And I said, I'm not just going to join because you're a member of this. I will come to the meetings. I will support you. I believe in what they say. I'm not going to join because I'm feeling harassed and bullied. Which I didn't feel at Greenham. I felt myself, and I felt independent, and I felt an individual still.
Mm. When you first got there, I'm always interested in this. How did you know who to look to? Was there someone obviously organising things? Did you just turn up and follow people?
Well, we were I think assigned to the Yellow Gate, which was
the Yellow Gate,
very dominant gate.
Yeah.
And also, it was a breakaway gate, because they continued as a force, I think, after Greenham had finished and had their own political agenda. Mm. And so, as a visitor, that was certainly the place that we made for on that particular day. But I did go to other ones.
Oh, did you?
And Blue Gate,
yeah.
I think.
Yeah.
But they all had, and I don't know enough about this to say, but I think they all had their different sort of agendas.
Yeah.
And approaches to things.
Yeah. Did it feel, when you moved, for instance, into Blue Gate, did you feel that for yourself? There was a different energy, or it was a different kind of space? Or
Yes, I think so. I think so. I wish I could remember details much more clearly than I probably am.
I'm interested in this because obviously there are lots of details that change over time with memory, and memory is fallible and all those kind of things. But do you talk about Greenham much in general? Like, before this interview was arranged, for example, is it kind of feature in the conversation of your life?
It does, but it doesn't go anywhere unless somebody else has been there.
Right. Interesting.
Or, like you, they have a particular reason for talking to me about it.
Yeah.
So it's not something that flows around the table necessarily.
Right. Why do you think that is?
I don't know. I'm not sure. I think, as I say, some people don't know enough about it, and if they haven't been there, they feel either guilty that they weren't there, or they are a bit misogynist in their reaction.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think that's occasionally happened.
Do you think there's been any influence by the media on the perception of Greenham?
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Yes. And I think they were probably very clever a lot of the time in using the media.
Oh, right. Okay.
I think they were probably, and they would know which newspaper was going to be responsive and which weren't. And I think it's probably quite likely that papers like the Mail and the Express were probably not very helpful. Again, I don't know precisely, but
at the time, you know, general kind of news media and things. Do you remember the general perception or the, I suppose, like the narrative that was put on the Greenham women? Was there a particular perception of them?
I think it went two ways. I think it paralleled. I think there was a lot of admiration, and then a lot of I could only describe as a sort of patriarchal response.
Okay. What was that?
Like, you know, silly women.
Right.
I think that kind of response was to be dismissed because it's just pathetic. Mm. So I didn't take much notice of that.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm just wondering if you ran into anyone at the time, going back and forth as you did.
Mm.
I'm wondering if you ran into anyone who kind of, you know, believed what they read and, you know.
I don't remember that.
No.
Sorry.
No, that's fine.
To be honest.
Because I was interested in this kind of two lives that you're kind of living by kind of going to Greenham, and it works in such a different way.
Mm.
And then kind of returning to normality, I suppose, and what that does.
It put me on a certain path, I tell you. I think I don't call it life-changing because I'd been sort of tripping along that path since I was a small girl.
Yeah.
But it certainly established something about women and what we were capable of, without a doubt.
Yeah.
And there were some wonderful women there. There were some pretty fucking terrifying women there as well.
Okay.
Bloody hell, yeah. Ooh.
Were you... did you meet anyone that surprised you? Like, maybe someone you were scared of and then got to know more, or vice versa?
I don't think I was there long enough. Okay. I think I needed to stay there.
Yeah.
For that to happen.
Yeah.
But, the woman that you need to be with somebody for a while, don't you? And the woman who really scared me, as I said, when I met her was Pat Arrowsmith.
Mm.
She completely freaked me out. and then I realised, I knew she was a good'un because of what she's done and because of her actions. And
yeah.
My God, she was in prison 11 times.
Wow.
And didn't try and hide her who she was either. I mean, that was a badge of pride, I think, for her.
Mm-hmm.
But she was a bit daunting. I always felt I can't quite match up. Whatever I've done in my life, it doesn't touch what this woman has done.
Was that the feeling that you had potentially with some of the other Greenham women?
Yes, it was. Yeah. When I looked at some of those women in their tents and sitting outside the tents and realising they'd been there all night and it was fucking cold...
Mm.
I thought, okay.
Yeah.
They're doing stuff I wasn't prepared to do.
Yeah. How do you feel now talking about?
I wish I'd stayed.
Really?
I wish I'd stayed for a few nights, seen a night through.
What was the decision at the time? Because there could be loads, a million reasons why you didn't stay. But was there a specific one for you at the time?
Well, I think I just went home to my family.
Yeah.
To my son.
Yeah, you know? Of course, yeah.
I mean, I had a husband who certainly looked after him and I'd left him while I went working, so it wasn't just that at all. That would be hypocritical to say that was it, but I just think I wasn't quite prepared to go that far. But now I wish I had.
Why do you wish you had, though?
Well, I could ask some of your questions with more clarity. And B, I'd like to have had the experience of just living there for a while.
I think that
would have been very rare. But you don't. I mean, I knew it was a rare thing to be there, but you don't realise just quite how extraordinary it is till later.
So has your opinion of it changed over time then? Or gotten stronger? Or
no, I see it very much as a beacon in my life.
Oh.
As something very important.
Yeah.
And very, very strong and very emotional. I don't know if that was something that put certain people off, that it was emotional. I mean, inevitably it was emotional. I mean, you hear people singing like that and ululating and lighting candles. It's very extraordinary. And you have a great sense of harmony with other people. It's the nearest I get to feeling religious, that kind of feeling.
That's interesting. Yeah. Did you have any kind of spiritual practice at the time, or
in a religious sense?
Yeah. Was there any kind of, I don't know, rituals or meditations or things that you did?
Well, I'm not religious, but I certainly have a great belief in the natural powers of our planet, which I feel are being eroded. So I like, for example, in the spring, and I haven't done it yet actually, I like to go out and stand with my bare feet in the grass for the first time each year, and things like that. So in that sense, I found being there very, very strong, because it was in a very natural, well, it wasn't natural, it's not a natural world to be around a base full of 96 cruise missiles.
Yeah.
That's not natural, but the world around it was beautiful. And to think, I mean, it's amazing that, I mean, the place was amazing because it was once Greenham Common, belonging to the people, before it was sold off. Which is, you know, was terrible.
It feels like an invasion.
Yes.
Because not only, I mean, I've heard it described as almost being an invasion of the country by, you know, American, US, but also invasion of nature.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah.
And what I didn't realise, because I didn't know how long Greenham Common had belonged to, not to the people, and it was actually sold off, I think, in the 30s by the local corporation or council or whatever it was to the MOD. And then I think it, first of all, was became an RAF base.
Yeah.
And then later on the Americans took it over as their missile base.
Do you remember first thinking about that and how you felt?
Well, that it wasn't just Greenham Common that made me think that. I mean, no. everyone was terrified of any kind of nuclear happening at that time. It was very much in people's consciousness.
Yes.
You know, I don't remember feeling particularly frightened, but I was very conscious of it.
Mm.
And because of the peace marches and so on. So it was it certainly wasn't new to me to be a protester.
No. The general feeling of nuclear weapons being so in people's consciousness back then, how do you think that compares to today?
Well, I think all our focus was on one thing then.
Mm.
One terrifying and potentially utterly destructive thing. But now one's focus is sort of 360 degrees all around the world because there's so much that's crazy and wrong. You know, if you're protesting, I hardly know where to begin protesting now, actually.
Yeah.
Because there is just so much to deal with. I want to play this song.
Yeah, okay. So we've got a song. So what is this song? Is this your song? Is this
No, it's not my song. It's not my song. I mean, I could... There were lots of rounds, like... We are women, we are women, that one, and it was that's a round.
Yeah.
And then there's the 10 green bottles one. Oh, yes. No cruise missiles wanted here today. No cruise missiles wanted here today. 'Cause if one cruise missile should accidentally stray, there'd be no more people left around to say. And it goes on, and there's different lines in... Yeah. Like, 'cause if one mad general decides to disobey, 'cause if one subject nation should try to break away, blah, blah, blah. But this one, I just think, and I couldn't remember this one properly. I think it's in that songbook. Get all the get the men's voices trying to.
Great.
Isn't that an amazing song?
Yeah. I love that because it's, you can literally hear how it's being used, you know. These aren't just songs that these women are writing because they're bored, you know. They have a message and they really try to communicate something to these men who are just trying to get rid of them, basically. Yeah.
And I really like it because the men's voices are there.
Yeah. Yeah. How long would the singing sessions go on for?
They'd blow up. They'd kind of come, you know, and then they'd fizzle out. And then and suddenly somebody would take up a song and off they'd go.
Yeah. if there is a kind of moment or a picture or something for you that sums up Greenham?
Well, it was at dusk, really, I think. It sounds a bit sentimental, that as it got darker and everyone lit candles, which is frightfully sentimental, I think, but I just kind of finished me. I found it very intense.
Just the darkness coming on.
The darkness, and I was also aware, because of some of these women, that they certainly weren't all likable. Why would they be? And that, you know, living this would probably be very difficult. Not necessarily. I mean, I think it was clear that some women really kind of took to it and enjoyed it. And then I think some women stayed there and found it difficult. And that's admirable.
Yeah.
And some women had small children as well. I mean, little ones.
Mm. Mm. How did you feel as a mother?
About them?
Yeah.
Well, I suppose if there's an extended family around, then I feel all right. And now I know that, and watching my granddaughters grow up, that what your parents do is very important, and it's not just having them around the whole time.
Mm.
I think you admire what they do, and I think that's inspirational. Mm. So I think maybe, you know, they missed their mother, but I think also, finally, they would say that that's fantastic that my mum did that.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Are your children, or even your grandchildren, how old they are? I'm sure they're probably not old enough, I don't know, to be involved in activism yet. Oh, but
don't you believe it. The 13-year-old is a big feminist.
Good. Excellent.
And she won't allow, not so much me, but she certainly won't allow my husband to get away with anything.
Oh, brilliant.
She's always challenged. Right, let's have an argument. Watch me. She's great.
Yeah.
They both are. The little one, the 11-year-old, plays football.
Mm-hmm. So they're both girls, are they?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which I think is wonderful. One, the feminist dances, actually. So she's got these two sides to her.
Mm.
She's really well, you know, dancer.
Yeah. And why not?
Why not?
Feminist dances. We need feminist everything, don't we? You know.
Yeah.
That's great. Because I like that question of, you know, activism being passed down.
Mm.
And whether your own children who kind of went on these CND marches, for example, you know, have been involved in anything.
Yes, I mean. But interestingly, my son's generation, he's in his 40s now. Mm. When he was a student, there weren't marches. The students did not go on marches then. I don't remember there being an angry group of younger people then, particularly. Yeah. And now it's very different again.
Yeah. So would he have been at uni in the 90s?
Yes, he went to Cambridge when... In 91.
Oh, okay. Yeah. You're right. I don't... Nothing's coming to my head of any kind of...
No, a bit later, 93, I think. 93.
Yeah.
Interesting. And he certainly didn't go into the theatre. So maybe because... When he grew up, he did go on all the marches as a little boy, as you saw.
Yeah.
And he did come to all the theatres and even came away to rep with me. So maybe he feels he's done his bit.
Maybe.
He's certainly not disinterested now. He's very... He would be very committed. Good. In fact, I think he went up... There was a women's march he took his kids on.
Oh, yeah, the Women's March.
Yeah. So he went, well, I was on that too, but we didn't kind of manage to meet up. Yeah. They loved it.
Good.
Oh, we've learnt some new swear words.
I think it's a really interesting type of feminism, you know. It's,
people have talked about it with the social media explosion, and I mean the Women's March, it was all happening on Facebook, and
it was brilliant, wasn't it?
Yeah, amazing. But what I find amazing about coming back to Greenham is the fact that this is a time without social media, without mobile phones. And the organisation of that mass group of women, both Embrace the Base, Reflect the Base, and some of the other actions as well. Amazing.
Yes, it was extraordinary.
Yeah.
Quite extraordinary.
Yeah.
It was like, I don't know. I don't know how they managed it.
Oh.
There was always someone with access to a landline somewhere.
Yeah. And you'd, I guess, have to rely on those messengers.
Yeah.
Like, how does it feel today talking to me about Greenham?
Well, actually, it's really made me think about it. But also, I think what I got quite nervous about having this interview because I get very irritated when women are vague and blather on, and I didn't want to be vague and blather on, and I guess I've been both vague and blathered on.
if you have, we've been vague and blathered on together. I wouldn't worry about that. So what was the worry about being vague?
Well, simply be a memory thing. That I couldn't be precise about memories. And I'm sure that time was full of little episodes, and that's why I was so incensed. I couldn't. I even went into the loft this morning to try and find this diary.
Yeah.
Because as I was writing things up, so that really annoyed me.
But that's the wonderful and weird thing about memory, isn't it? It's like, actually, in a way, whatever happened is kind of what we remember, and we remember whatever happened, and they kind of work together. Do you know what I mean by that? And I think time does affect how we see things, and that's why I'm interested in, you know, how it is to talk about it today, and what is the feeling of that. I suppose
I remember the mud. My god, it was muddy.
You had your pink wellies on.
I had my pink wellies on. Yes.
They looked so clean in that photo. They I can't did. Imagine.
That's how an early one.
Yeah, yeah. It was early in the day.
I was very proud of my pink wellies for some reason.
There's one question that we're asking everyone, so I'm going to be very specific and read it off the paper. Could you explain why you think it's important Greenham is remembered by subsequent generations?
I think it's very important simply because of what it was and what it represented and how it showed that the power of women, and also how something like that can change people's lives, because I think people's lives were changed by that and by being there.
Yeah.
It probably wrecked a few marriages. I don't know about that, but I think it certainly put a strain on marriages. But I think women found a singular voice together, and I think that's terribly important. And I think the whole kind of feeling for women has changed from around that time. And I think possibly Greenham had something to do with it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think women want to hang on to that.